The Atlanta summer night had a heavy, stagnant quality that seemed to press against the windshield of my patrol unit as I pulled into the bright, fluorescent glare of the Wendy's parking lot on University Avenue. It was late, the kind of hour where the city usually begins to settle, but the calls for service never truly pause. The initial report was mundane, a common nuisance complaint about a man asleep in his vehicle, effectively blocking the drive-through lane and forcing other customers to maneuver around him. When I arrived, the scene appeared entirely routine, just another welfare check on a driver who had likely succumbed to exhaustion or something more complicated. The white sedan sat idling, a silent obstacle in the path of the late-night traffic, and as I approached the driver's side window, I saw him slumped over the wheel. He was deep in sleep, oblivious to the world around him and the growing line of frustrated motorists. I tapped on the glass, a sound that usually signals the beginning of a brief interaction and a quick resolution. The man inside eventually stirred, blinking against the light, and as he rolled down the window, the smell of alcohol reached me immediately. This was the moment the trajectory changed, though at the time, it felt like just another standard encounter in a career defined by them. This man, who would soon be identified through official records as Rayshard Brooks, began a conversation that would eventually be dissected by the entire world. The interaction began with a deceptive calm that lasted for over 40 minutes as we worked through the standard protocols of a suspected intoxicated driver investigation. I stood by as the primary officer engaged in a polite, almost conversational dialogue with Brooks, who was cooperative and appeared non-threatening throughout the initial stages of the encounter. We moved him from the car to the side of the building, away from the flow of traffic, to conduct field sobriety tests in the open air of the parking lot. I watched his movements closely, noting the slight sway and the repetitive nature of his answers, as he explained that he had been celebrating his daughter's birthday earlier that day. Every step of this process followed the precise training guidelines established for the department, from the horizontal gaze nystagmus test to the walk and turn. Brooks struggled with the physical coordination required for the tasks, stumbling slightly but remaining apologetic and respectful to the officers on the scene. There was no immediate sign of the volatility that would follow, and for a significant portion of the hour, the atmosphere remained controlled and professional. I recorded his statements and monitored his demeanor, noting that he seemed more embarrassed than agitated by the situation. He asked if he could leave his car in the lot and walk to his sister's house nearby, a request that we could not grant given the legal requirements of the stop once a breathalyzer test was administered. The digital readout of the portable breath test confirmed he was over the legal limit, and at that point, the nature of the stop shifted from an investigation to an arrest. As the handcuffs were produced and the officers moved to secure his wrists behind his back, the compliance that had defined the previous 40 minutes vanished in an instant. The shift into physical conflict was instantaneous and violent, a sudden explosion of movement that the body camera footage later documented with clinical, jarring precision. As the officers attempted to close the cuffs, Brooks pivoted his weight and lunged forward, initiating a chaotic struggle on the asphalt that lasted only seconds, but felt much longer in the heat of the moment. We went down in a tangle of limbs, the sound of grunts and scuffling feet echoing off the brick walls of the fast food restaurant. During the wrestling match on the ground, Brooks managed to gain leverage, and in the blur of the fight, he reached for and successfully wrenched a yellow taser from the officer's holster. The metallic click of the weapon being deployed rang out as Brooks broke free from the grasp of the officers and began to sprint across the parking lot toward the street. I tracked his movement as he ran, his silhouette illuminated by the overhead parking lights and the strobing blues of the patrol cars. About midway through his flight, Brooks turned his torso back toward the pursuing officer, extending his arm and firing the taser in a desperate attempt to incapacitate his pursuer. The prongs missed their mark, but the act of firing a weapon, even a less lethal one, fundamentally altered the threat assessment in a fraction of a second. The pursuing officer transitioned from his taser to his service weapon, a movement honed through thousands of hours of range training and tactical drills. Three shots were fired in rapid succession, the muzzle flashes cutting through the darkness of the University Avenue corridor. Brooks collapsed forward onto the pavement near the edge of the lot, the stolen taser skittering across the ground away from his reaching hands. The transition from a calm conversation to a fatal shooting had occurred in less than 1 minute, leaving a scene of sudden, absolute silence. The forensic reconstruction of the scene and the digital evidence provided the most objective account of the final seconds of the encounter. I reviewed the surveillance footage from the Wendy's exterior cameras, which captured the entire event from a high-angle wide shot, showing the distance between the officer and Brooks at the moment of the shooting. The footage clearly showed Brooks looking back over his shoulder, the distinct yellow frame of the taser visible in his hand as he aimed it toward the officer trailing behind him. On the ground, investigators recovered two spent shell casings and the taser, which had been discharged twice during the pursuit. The autopsy report later confirmed that Brooks was struck twice in the back, with the projectiles causing catastrophic internal damage that led to his death shortly after arriving at the hospital. Further examination of the body camera audio revealed the exact moment the struggle began, including the frantic commands given by the officers as they tried to maintain control of the situation. The digital evidence also included the dash camera from the patrol vehicle, which provided a front-facing view of the initial sobriety tests and the beginning of the fight. Technicians mapped the trajectory of the bullets and the positioning of all parties involved, creating a three-dimensional model of the parking lot to determine the line of sight and the timing of the shots. The taser itself was analyzed for deployment data, confirming that it had been fired just moments before the service weapon was discharged. Every piece of hardware, from the cameras to the weapons, was cataloged and processed to ensure that the narrative of the night was backed by physical reality rather than memory alone. This collection of data formed the backbone of the subsequent investigation, providing a frame-by-frame breakdown of a sequence that moved too fast for the human eye to process in real time. The legal aftermath of the shooting was immediate and intensely scrutinized, beginning with the termination of the officer who fired the shots less than 24 hours after the incident. The Fulton County District Attorney at the time moved swiftly, announcing a total of 11 charges against the primary officer, including felony murder and multiple counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. The second officer on the scene faced charges of aggravated assault and violation of his oath of office, based on allegations regarding his conduct immediately following the shooting. These legal maneuvers took place against a backdrop of significant civil unrest in the city, leading to the resignation of the Atlanta police chief and a period of intense administrative upheaval within the department. However, the legal trajectory changed significantly when a new district attorney took office and the case was eventually transferred to a special prosecutor from the Prosecuting Attorney's Council of Georgia. After a comprehensive review of the evidence, the special prosecutor announced in August of 2022 that no criminal charges would be pursued against either officer involved in the death of Rayshard Brooks. The final legal determination concluded that the use of force was objectively reasonable under Georgia law, given that Brooks had disarmed an officer, fled with a weapon, and turned to fire that weapon at the pursuing officer. The administrative decisions regarding the officer's employment were also challenged, with the Atlanta Civil Service Board eventually ruling that the primary officer's termination had been conducted without due process, leading to his temporary reinstatement and back pay. The city eventually reached a settlement with the Brooks family in the amount of $1.5 million to resolve a civil lawsuit related to the death. The case remains a definitive point of study in the application of the Fourth Amendment and the legal standards for the use of deadly force by law enforcement. The University Avenue Wendy's, the site of the encounter, was burned during the initial protests and was later demolished, leaving only a vacant lot where the events of that June night took place.